Hi, we are Tim and Carolina, and we're a couple of friends, colleagues, and former coworkers.
We love our industry, our clients, and our community, and that inspired us to share our experience and our guest experience to broaden perspectives and maybe think a little differently. Please leave a review on iTunes and tell us how we can serve you better, or whatever podcast player you use for that matter, and share with anyone you think might have some interest working in this industry or learning more about it. This is all made possible through support from Nichiha.com and Benbio.com. Inspiration
and motivation to inform and attract future talent to the building industry. You can leave questions you'd like us to discuss or topics you want us to delve into more deeply or request to be a guest or recommend a guest at buildperspectives.com. So today's episode is a little different. We are talking about supply chain. That sounds a little boring, Tim.
I know when I talk about it with folks, I get pretty animated about it. I kind of have a passion for this because of my experience, not only as a tradesperson, but also as a lumber siding salesperson at a lumber yard, and then working in distribution at a two-step distributor, and then working for manufacturers, and totally different experience with each. And what I learned a lot through working for manufacturers is a lot about the supply chain, and more accurately, some of the problems in the supply chain that trickle down to the end user and cause all sorts of challenges.
So I heard a very interesting quote from you earlier today. It's a Tim tweet, if I've ever heard one. Whenever you reduce friction, you increase conflict. Can you expand on that?
Yeah. Well, I tried to buy that domain, but it's super long. So whenever you're developing a product or a service, the main two things to keep in mind is, what is the end? You know, what's the end that you're trying to accomplish for yourself? And then what is the end that your end user is trying to accomplish? And whenever you introduce intermediaries to that, it adds friction, but reduces conflict because you're separated from the questions and challenges your end user has.
Well, it reduces perceived conflict, I guess.
Yeah, it does. Perceive, like, the conflict's still there, but right, it distances you from that. However, okay, Let's say you're going the other way. So let's say you're a manufacturer and you have a multi-channel approach, but none of it's direct, is directly in contact and in tune with your end user. You're depending solely on your distribution, your dealers, and your two-step and one-step distributors, your box stores, your independent rep firms. Those all distance you from the conflict and the challenges that, because you're assuming the channel, you hired them, they're getting a margin to take care of any challenges that come up. And they're taking care of ostensibly the marketing and sort of promotion costs and headcount and all that stuff. So whenever you want to have a closer dealing with your end user, all those intermediaries sort of freak out. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can see that. So when you're reducing the friction, you're cutting some people out of the deal, right? Possibly. Or just because you make life easier for yourself doesn't mean you're making life easier for your end user necessarily. So I guess
not necessarily, because you might not have the equity or the experience that the channel partners have. Hopefully you have awesome channel partners.
But so what's the advantage? What's the advantage of going through for a manufacturer to use a two-step and a one-step in a big box?
Well, there are a lot of advantages if they are effective and
if that's a big
have
if.
A strong brand. It is a it is an if, and the reason it's an if, because we're always dealing with people, right? And people are the moving target of any industry, and that's why so many folks are focused on machine learning and automation right now, because it does remove a little bit of that component of
humanity. Unpredictability.
Yeah, unpredictability is a better way of putting it. Like, yeah, things happen in people's lives. And the reason to have those folks is there's a host of reasons. One is maybe AR. Another is you don't have the budget or the ability to hire an entire sales force. So you're going to insert your product along with a bunch of others that are already being represented, maybe complementary products, maybe completely dissimilar. You have this trend, or I guess not a trend, it's a practice that's been in place for years. I mean, how many
how
many businesses do you know in the building industry that use one and two-step distribution?
A lot of them, most of them.
Right, most of them. So when there's a really good partnership and really effective leadership on all parts, it's super effective because your boots on the ground is exponentially bigger. The challenge is when it's not. When those intermediaries are either ineffective or can even block your efforts to make your end user's experience better.
Yeah, so, it takes away control. And, right. Well, you know, especially like when it comes to pricing, when it comes to, you know, who gets promoted first, if they carry your competition or if they don't, there are a lot of unknowns and you're kind of taking control away from the manufacturer and giving it to the distributor.
Right.
Scary.
Yeah, and it is scary, but for a lot of folks, they look at it as the de facto standard. Let's say they're going to launch a product. I know a guy right now, he's launching a product that's a sound deadening paint, and he doesn't have a budget to hire an entire sales force. So what does he have to do? He kind of has to look at, what are these channel partner options? You know what I mean? That's a challenge you face. Or let's say a manufacturer comes into the United States from another country. Their choices are what? You know, they inventory and ship the product themselves, or they make a deal with somebody and maybe even back that up with independent reps. There are a lot of moving parts, and yeah, every moving part is supposed to reduce friction. It's supposed to make things easier, but it's usually easier for the manufacturer. It's just making things easier for the manufacturer, because guess what? Manufacturers make stuff. They're not really usually great sales organizations. Mm-hmm. So they're great at making things.
Yeah. And I can see that when you're new to the marketplace, like this sound deadening paint, you don't have connections and nobody knows who you are. So you're going to need that supply chain to help you promote.
Right. Right. So take your product, for instance. How does Fireclay go to market?
We sell direct. We've been selling direct since, I believe, 2014.
What would that change for your customers and you if tomorrow the CEO said, this isn't happening, I know, but if he said, okay, we are going to distribute through tile houses, and we're also going to sign up with some other supply two-step distribution. We're going to have one and two-step distribution, and we're also going to go to the box stores. What would that do with your life and your customer's life?
In some ways, because we don't really have presence on the ground in every single state. So in some ways, I think it would increase sales. And we don't have a product like architectural wall panels that like Nichiha has that is sort of, I don't want to say highly technical because it's not, but tile is just tile and anyone can sell it. It's right. Just that we're at a different price point and our messaging and like what we stand behind is so specific that it's just been so much better for us to take back the reins from distribution and just do our own distribution.
And that sounds like it's not necessarily important for the actual logistics or AR. That supply chain is important more for the messaging.
Yes. Which brings us to one of your supply chains that you were talking about is the content and information distribution that feed the sales funnel.
Yeah, so I broke it into manufacturing, channel sales, which we already talked about, and then the content and information. So a lot of times when you're working with third parties or fourth parties or fifth parties, everyone has kind of a different content distribution. They might have a newsletter. One might favor social over the other. They might use different vernacular based on their business or their history or their experience.
Or where they're from, if they're Canadian.
Where they're from.
Yeah. Right.
So from a brand perspective, you know, you're getting kind of a broader distribution, but you're not getting the focus and consistency. And so you always want people that love your product and they're happy about it. You always want them sharing and talking about it. Mm-hmm. And that's really important. But what you're not going to be able to control in those are your SEO and your language, your culture. Think about Fireclay and we think about Nichiha. There's a certain culture, that's a lot of that's based on language.
Yes.
How we talk about our products and how we talk about our companies. You can only infuse that at a certain level with your distributor partners because they also have their own culture and language.
That's correct.
So,
and also there's evolution. I mean, think about how much Nichiha has changed in the last 13, 14 years. So even the culture evolves and the culture changes and the product changes. And it's not that we change to bend to the market, but we listen to our clients, we listen to our installers and end users, and we make adjustments and tweaks. And so culture evolves and that message is transported to your internal people, people like me, people like you, and sales and service and support. But that doesn't necessarily translate over to your your supply chain, especially the ones that are like 8 states away?
Well, think about like the classic supply chain, telephone game. Mm-hmm. Ever played that? So yes. When we think about, let's say at Nichiha, we say, well, Nichi products is only available in the Southeast. And then we say that at a product meeting with VPs in a distribution or something like that, or independent reps or dealer reps, and they go to their people and they say, well, Nichi products are only available in the Southeast. Or it might get misconstrued as Nichi products are not available at all. There has been so much confusion over availability of different products. That's just one example. Mm-hmm. And then by the time it gets to the contract, you're like, well, Nichiha is not available in this market.
Yeah, it's not an option for me. I'm not even going to consider it.
Yeah, exactly. So you already internally have some, what's the right word? You already get, yeah, exactly.
Communication breakdown.
Yes. Communication breakdown. You sort of, the message gets diluted or conveyed the wrong way. So just think what that's like for people outside your company that have other products and other worries and other challenges and other focus than you. So whenever you can control that, you can control the message. That's number one. On the content side, you're also controlling your SEO. So you can rein in all your backlinks. You can focus your paid and organic search on specific things that are going to drive your business, where you don't know, number one, that your distributor partners, your dealers, your box stores necessarily have your best interests at heart, if they even have an SEO strategy and content.
That's something that you, I mean, I agree with you. I think that's something that as the client, we can ask whoever is doing that service for us and, you know, show me the plan, you know, what's the marketing plan.
Yep. And the cool thing is, have you ever had contractors share Fireclay content? Oh,
yeah.
So when you develop compelling content, it's basically ready in a box for other people. Mm-hmm. But if you depend on your supply chain to do that, then you are going to get sort of a hodgepodge of content. So, you know, you get to control the supply chain and the content. You get to figure out how that ties to your sales funnel. And if you're not already working with digital marketing firm or an internal digital marketing person that handles the content, there's tons of great information on how to just get started with that.
Yeah.
And how you can roll in SEO. We use Venvio. We love working with Venvio because they're experts in all of that, and they can help us educate us on how we can craft our content in a way that's basically share ready and also informative.
And they understand the audience because their niche is in building materials. So Venvio knows who they're dealing with in terms of like me and people like me and you, but also the end users.
Right. The question isn't whether like, who should I use? I mean, it's great to connect with the right people. There are some good firms in the industry. They're the ones we work with and really enjoy working with at Venvio.com. But also there's 6 or 7 other agencies out there that can help you put something together depending on your budget, depending on your focus, and depending on their discipline. So supply chain, when it comes to content, super important to rein that in yourself as a brand. Channel, we already talked about. One thing I want to add to channel though is, so let's say a lot of people think, oh, I'm going to get closer to the end user. They think, oh, well, they're going to sell direct. You don't necessarily have to sell direct to get closer to end user. One, there are 3 ways to get closer to end user from a channel side. One is through content. Figure out who your end user is, that avatar, and then speak to them through everything you're doing.
But building materials manufacturers, we have like 4 avatars. Because, right? I mean, because we have architects, we have designers, we have contractors, the developers. There are different, I mean, yes, the end user can mean many different things. And the end user is not necessarily the one that puts you on the spec. So,
you're not, but they depends on the segment and depends on where you're at in the adoption curve. Let's say you're more mature in the adoption bell curve, you have more credibility and weight. And developers and other, all the end users, they're going to make their channel, their contractor, their installer, their suppliers use your product. But if you're early on, you have to take a different approach. Mm-hmm. So another way to get closer to your end user without selling direct is publish your pricing or allow some way for the people to access their top questions, get answers to pricing, availability, where can they buy it, that sort of stuff. give them the answers to the questions you hear every day. And that is working really well for us now that we're focused more and more on that. And that has also, I think, empowered people in the channel at lumberyards, at distribution, to have more of the information they need on a day-to-day basis and reduce their call volume.
But even for you guys right now, I mean, there's residential and commercial, and how you talk to residential and how you talk to commercial is completely different. Mm-hmm. And how you treat the client is different. And they need different amounts and types of handholding. So I think you, right? And with Nichiha, Nichiha has two completely different segments that they serve.
Right. And we're even focused on, like, what I do is I'm mostly focused on the modular offsite providers and architects focused on that, and, you know, enabling the salespeople to know what that is and how we handle that internally. But I also work with modern home. So modern home involves a lot of interaction with homeowners. Mm-hmm. So they're driving the decision. So, you know, that is a lot of direct contact with the end user. And that is an important disintermediation that needs to happen, because then you can do a lot more for the process for them for a better customer experience. Then the other part of the supply chain is the manufacturing flow. So one of the things we talked about in B Corp is it's not just about having a sustainable product necessarily. Companies should be thinking about where they're sourcing raw materials and how they're moving it from point A to point B, and then how they're manufacturing it, right? There were other parts of B Corp than that, but from a manufacturing standpoint, you know, to make great products, there's always concessions to be made to make something durable. Like, it's great to cut down a tree, you know, because they grow so fast, supposedly, depending on what part of the industry you're talking to. So they say, some in the forestry might say, yes, we want people using trees for the siding. The problem is you have to replace that siding every 7 to 10 years. Then how do you get a more durable product? And where are you going to get the products to make that? The raw materials, and then how are you going to get them efficiently from point A to point B?
And how are you going to manufacture it? And what are the emissions that you're going to have when you're manufacturing
it?
Right. Yeah, we're getting in the weeds with that. But the presumption here is that you're manufacturing a product that is needed and wanted in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And there's many different ways that you can go about getting it to your client. And depending on where you are in your, I guess, in the channel, then one may be better for you than the other. B2B might be better for you than B2C, for example. And even within that, whether you're residential or commercial, one may be better than the other. So it depends.
One of the big challenges in the building industry, and why manufacturers engage distributors, even if they have the ability to handle everything else, is because they need them for logistics and AR, which is a powerful and compelling reason. So, you know, one thing to think about, do I have a heavy, bulky product? So certainly we do here at Nichiha. Mm-hmm. It needs a certain way, you know, trucks to deliver. And so we have to really consider that with third-party logistics. And then what's the equipment your supply chain has? You know, it doesn't help to be able to deliver a big truck to a job direct and go, like, we deliver direct to the job site, when they don't have a forklift on site.
Yeah, right. You're doing a nice, beautiful custom home in Santa Monica or Malibu, and then nobody can unload
a trailer.
Nobody can unload the material.
Well, the key, the whole part of supply chain was thinking about, where is the friction that's most plaguing your end user? So in order to know that, you need to, number one, know who your end user is, your ideal client persona, ICP, or your avatar.
ICA.
Know what their pain is. And then what one thing could you knock down for that client this year? How would you go about it? Is it the distribution part? Is it the content flow? Is it logistics? And then once you identify that, then you have something actionable. You can't blow all of this up at once. And maybe you don't need to blow any of it up, but it's something to consider.
Yeah, I think that's a great suggestion, and it's a great place to start. And it's, and once you've sort of addressed that problem or pain point in your ideal customer, then it's a way to get back in touch with them and say, hey, we fixed this. Let us know how we're doing now.
Yeah, I agree. And that's another thing you can, what's a major challenge in the industry is that you have not enough executives getting close to the customer to find out what the challenges are.
Exactly.
I love that. Some companies are great at that. I know our leadership at Nichiha is really works on that, getting close to the customer to find out what the challenges are so we can actually address those and make things easier. So,
isn't that interesting? That is such a good point because in my experience, that's a game changer. Like, I'm sorry, I'm mind blown right now. I know this is obvious to most people, but same here. The CEO of Fireclay, Eric Edelson, that man responds to Yelp reviews. Like,
there are Yelp reviews about Tile?
Yes, there are Yelp reviews about our San Francisco showroom, good and bad. And so he is down there. Yes, he's the CEO, but he's very, very hands-on. And all of us, he receives feedback from everybody. And I know that Jim is like that. And I know that Nichi has like that as well. And there's a lot of communication that goes on. I remember when I was in the technical department at Nichiha, and I would sit in at the sales meetings and I just get all of the feedback from sales, from people all over the country, just to see what we needed to change, what problems we needed to solve.
Yeah, because what we found was there was incremental need for the product that we already had packaged
from
Japan. But when we made changes that were more suited for the U.S. market, people really responded. Our sales, our customer experience, our employees' experience, everything got better when we did that.
And you know what? I'll speak for myself. I took that for granted. And now I know that not every company is like that. And it shows. When you have leadership that is in touch with the end user and their employees and the people that are in touch with the end user, that end user's experience with the product, the quality of the product itself, and the quality of that company, and even their sales, I will venture to say, and the repeat customers, that's a big difference.
Yeah. And I think besides, having that relationship with the end user, you also get some insights maybe into future trends.
Exactly. And you get to design the newest thing for them.
Right. Yeah. So it's not all, when people think about disrupting the supply chain, a lot of them think about, modular offsite, buying direct, all these different, yes, a lot of that happens. There are different ways to go about that. And if anyone wants to learn more about those options, they'll be in the write-up for this. But the main thing to take away is talk to the customers, the end users, the people in the middle, the installers, the GCs, the suppliers. They're all important. You want to be close to them because they also need to be taken care of. But all of that conversation is driven by the end user. So, I think Tesla is a really good example of that in the automotive world, listening to customers. And then they do sell direct, but they also went about that very deliberately, that decision. And that was all about how to get closer to the end user, disintermediate with purpose. So whenever you reduce friction, you increase conflict.
And that makes more sense now.
It makes more sense now. And that's especially true the more entrenched you are in the market. So don't be worried about that. Think about your end user and then make sure everyone that is an intermediary is included in the conversation if they're indeed part of your future.
Absolutely.
That's our advice to you. This podcast is made available free to you, our loyal listener, thanks to Nichiha and Venvio. Please subscribe and rate us on your podcast player.
Also, podcasts are still very new to a lot of folks, believe it or not. So if you find Build Perspectives helpful and motivating, please share a link to the show and let your friends know how to subscribe so they can be notified when new episodes drop.
Entertaining architecture and construction talk with fresh perspectives, something my dad says you can never have too much of. Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.